California in San Bernardino, or where is that?
Yes.
Okay.
San Bernardino County.
Are you looking for a book to boost your child's self-esteem and image? Listen to what six-time Emmy Award winner and Nobel Peace Prize nominee Shawn Duperin has to say about the Journey of Joy children's book series. She says, quote, "It's inspiring to find a children's book series that gets to the heart of why we're here and to enjoy life's journey. It is truly compelling. It reinforces your child's strong sense of self, the essence of what every parent wants for their precious child. I highly recommend," end quote. The four inspiring and beautifully illustrated books in the Journey of Joy children's book series, authored by Beth Donnelly and Dagny Grant, can be found on Amazon.com. Sharing the wisdom of positive I Am statements, these books are titled I Am Enough, I Am Unique and Awesome, I Am Great, and I Am Brave. Pick up a set for the children in your life today. Just go to Amazon.com and enter Journey of Joy Series. That's Journey of Joy Series. Welcome to the Echoes of the Universe radio show, brought to you by Matrix Productions. Conscious Conversations with Dagny Grant and Beth Donnelly, sharing thought-expanding moments to nourish your soul.
Thought-expanding moments indeed. Today is going to be a wild ride, everybody. So this is really going to be fun. Hello, guys, and welcome to the Echoes of the Soul radio show, brought to you by Matrix Productions. This is Dagny Grant, and I'm here with my co-host, Beth Donnelly, for a fascinating conversation about scientific paradigms, quantum holographic perspectives, and social consciousness as it relates to the evolution of humanity. So get some popcorn, strap in, and let's have some fun with my fabulous co-host, Beth Donnelly, and our brilliant guest, scientist, philosopher, Mayan calendar expert, and author, Carl Johan Kalman, Ph.D. Beth and I have had so much fun reading and discussing Dr. Kalman's book, The Nine Waves of Creation, Quantum Physics, Holographic Evolution, and the Destiny of Humanity. And we're really looking forward to sharing his thoughts with you today. Now, before I tell you more about Dr. Kalman and bring him into the show, let me bring Beth Donnelly on to say hello. Hi, Beth. How's your world today?
Hi, Dagny. I am doing great today because we have a sunny day of great weather, and I'm just sitting here at my desk and looking forward to this discussion. You know, you and I have always talked a lot about our vibrational frequencies and how they relate to our consciousness, you know, just to our ability to relate to others with empathy and kindness. And I am just so fascinated with Dr. Kalman's work, specifically his book, The Nine Waves of Creation, which you said we were discussing and having a great time doing that, and that is so true. Dr. Kalman takes, you know, what I think, this the idea of vibration and frequencies just to a whole new level. And, you know, he speaks to vibrational resonance with each wave and how it can affect the quality of our life. And I just think that that's such an amazing idea. And so I'm waiting for you to bring him on.
The whole concept that there's more than one hologram, perhaps, right? That there's, there are levels running parallel to each other throughout the fabric of time is so fascinating and really very different than how I've ever considered the quantum mechanics of our reality. So this will be really fun. So let me just tell our audience a little bit about Carl so that we can they can understand a little bit better what his background is. Carl Johan Kalman is a scientist and philosopher with a Ph.D. in physical biology from the University of Stockholm. Recognized for his theory that the Mayan calendar reflects the evolution of the global mind, he is an author of several books, including The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization. According to Dr. Kalman, Over the past few years, the world has witnessed changes in social consciousness that the ruling scientific paradigm has not been able to explain. These changes correspond with the activation of new waves of creation emanating from the center of the universe that influence human thinking. From the Big Bang to the present, these waves guide the evolution of the universe, and through their holographic resonance with the human mind, profoundly shape revolutions in religion, technology, the economy, and social consciousness. Presenting a quantum holographic perspective on the world history and human consciousness, Carl Coleman explains the quantum physics behind the waves of the Mayan calendar system and how these waves allow us to understand the shifting eras on Earth, as well as the possibilities of the future. He describes how prior to the activation of the sixth wave in 3115 BCE, our social systems were based on a unified cosmic order, but the hologram of this wave shifted society to an all-consuming focus on good and evil, leading to the rise of patriarchal religions, slavery, and warfare. He explores how later waves and their new holograms helped humanity survive the negative effects of the sixth wave, such as the Industrial Revolution of the seventh wave and the Digital Revolution of the eighth wave. In 2011, the ninth wave was activated, bringing with it accelerated push for a more egalitarian world, more equality, rising awareness of unity consciousness, and access to the full power of all nine waves of creation. Now, Dr. Coleman explains how our individual resonance with each of these waves plays a role in the quality of our lives, like Beth was talking about earlier, and how we must consciously work to resonate with the higher waves. Revealing how we can become quantum activists in a holographic world by aligning with the ninth wave, the author shows us how we can help manifest the destiny of humanity hinted at in ancient texts. So, wow, right? Without further ado, let's bring in Dr. Coleman to discuss his guide to awakening our lives with the frequency of the nine waves of creation. So thanks so much for joining us today, Dr. Coleman. Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
You have a fascinating history. We have written so many amazing books, and it's really exciting for Beth and I to be able to share these that you present with our audience today. I have personally recently been kind of diving into studies on the metaphysical Kabbalah and its references to the Tree of Life. Your work references a cosmic Tree of Life in a way that Beth and I were finding so interesting. It was kind of like, you know, the whole chicken and the egg story, which came first, the discussion of which came first, the Tree of Life or the Big Bang. And we would love it if you would explain for our listeners what the cosmic Tree of Life is and how has its existence been kind of covered up by official, generally known science.
Well, you know, I should say that my starting point of interest in the Tree of Life is the fact that this is a concept that you would find in almost all the ancient civilizations of our planet. And it's so widespread. I personally have had contact with it not only from Scandinavia, where I'm from, where the Vikings would always talk about this world tree called Yggdrasil, which was this huge ash that was bigger than the whole sky and the whole earth. But then I've gone as far as to New Zealand and found that the Maori people worshipped a specific tree in their jungles, the Kaori tree, and called that the Tree of Life. And then among the Maya that I've visited extensively, not only is the tree of life, the origin of their calendar, but it's also a particular tree that they have decided in the jungle, the Ceiba tree, that they call the tree of life on earth, so to speak. And even today, when they are clear-cutting the jungle in those areas, the Mayan workers will refuse to cut down this particular tree because it's a holy tree. And it's related to the four directions. It has a root system that sort of points in the four directions. So, and then, of course, that taken together with the fact that the tree of life is basic to the book of Genesis, and so the Judeo-Christian mythology, if you like, and then there's been an offspring from that in the Kabbalistic version, a more esoteric tree of life. So that's the first thing that struck me. How come all peoples of this planet essentially have a myth, as it's called, of a tree of life? And, well, on the level of, on the planet, you might say that the pole axis, the polar axis, is sort of a tree of life. And on the level of the galaxy, you might say that the galactic center is the tree of life. But then the question has been for a long time, at least in my mind, and I proposed this early on in my books, that there must also be a tree of life on the cosmic level, on the largest level. And for a long time, when I started to write my books in the 90s, nothing was known about this. Yet I kept proposing there must be a cosmic tree of life around which everything is organized, because that's how the ancient myths look upon this particular tree. And so what has happened in science, in cosmological science, over the past 10 or 15 years, is actually that kind of a central axis to the universe has been discovered. And this has been done with high technology, with sending up satellites that have mapped the so-called cosmic microwave background radiation, which really is an afterglow from the Big Bang, and actually it's like taking a baby picture of the universe. And a sequence of those satellites have been set up and come back with the same result. There is a cosmic axis. And more recently, an increasing number of studies of other kind of astronomical objects have verified that this particular axis actually divides the universe almost like a yin-yang polarity. There are certain aspects of the astronomy of our cosmos that is divided in two halves. And now, when I say, maybe I'm overstating it to say that it's covered up, but what I do think is that this is really something enormously fundamental to, it's the origin of the universe that is now being looked upon in a new perspective. And it's a fundamental interest of people to know that this cosmos is actually divided like yin and yang into two spheres. And so it makes me wonder why is this not coming out? It's something that's published in the real scientific literature. It's not just somebody sitting there making it up. It's verified by the best scientific institutions in the world, and yet for reasons that this doesn't really fit the agenda or the belief systems among many traditional scientists, then it's something that hasn't come out. It's almost like my books are the ones that are talking about it, and except for in the very specialized literature. But I think this is a very, very important thing, because it tells us that the intuition, you might say, that ancient peoples and still indigenous peoples would have, that there is a creator cosmic tree of life, or creator tree of life. That intuition now, modern science has caught up with that and verified that's actually how it works. So that's the story about this. I think it's a fascinating thing because it really turns upside down many of our previous view of what the cosmos looks like, and also helps us to see that there might have been a sort of kind of overriding intelligence in this tree that has helped create the cosmos the way it is now.
Well, what's fascinating to me is the concept of the Big Bang itself may not have been, you know, when we're talking about cause and effect, that what may, you know, in theory have been at cause of the Big Bang is the existence, the pre-existence of the Tree of Life, that sacred geometry basically in itself was in existence and was at cause of the Big Bang. Is that what your theory basically is, you know, just to kind of generalize?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Yes, it is, and I'm very happy that you see that or see it the same way that I do. It points to this geometry as being the basic, the foremost, the primary intelligence of the universe, and from that everything else has emanated.
Well, and so even the logic, the intelligence of the periodic table, of you know all of those building blocks of existence of all the galaxies, you know, of all the universe, would have existed within that tree of life as just a basic makeup of the I love that concept. It actually kind of gives me a helps me kind of get behind the whole Big Bang theory with a little bit more logic, oddly, than it just like being God wanting to, the concept of God wanting to experience itself. So you, one of the things that you talk about in your work is the evolution of life on Earth being determined by an extraterrestrial source. But when you say that, you're not talking about a quote-unquote aliens as an extraterrestrial source. Can you, when you refer to that, are you referring to the Tree of Life, or is that referring to something else in the process?
No, I really do. But I do want to make the point then that in this kind of worldview that ultimately sort of comes in many ways from the Mayan influences, everything that happens on our planet and all of its evolution biologically and mentally and so forth is actually coming from the Tree of Life, which is outside of the planet, and it's like this Tree of Life, it broadcasts waves across the universe, and the likely consequence of that is that wherever, on whatever planet there might be the suitable conditions, life will occur. And I think that happens in processes that are essentially synchronized and parallel. And it's our Earth then is what happens here is not just something that comes of our own planet. The ultimate sources, I would say, then is the cosmic tree of life, which is an extraterrestrial source in the sense that it's outside of the Earth, and we're here downloading these resonances or these waves of creation and creating in accordance with it. So that's what I mean by that.
So that's really just fascinating, Dr. Coleman. a cosmic tree of life. That's, you know, and in my travels, you know, especially in Europe, when we would encounter major cathedrals or even smaller structures, and we could see the sacred geometry everywhere. And Doggy and I did some studies on sacred geometry earlier in the year, and it's incredible, but it really does appear to be everywhere if you look for it.
Yeah, it seems so that in ancient times or in medieval times, people were much more aware of this role that geometrical structure had, and that their source ultimately were divine. But I think a little bit what my book here adds to this is that even the simplest of the geometric constructs, like the straight line, that is sacred geometry as well. It's very profound sacred geometry, and really something that has shaped our civilizations to a large degree. And yet it is something that really comes from outside. It's something that our minds, or our brains, I should say, are downloading these straight lines and creating our reality in accordance with that. And so in this whole worldview where the basic sacred geometry emanates from the tree of life, then it makes sense that people wanted to contact that, be in resonance with it, and be in contact with it, and download this as a means of contacting the divine and the source of everything, and the also something that would lead to us to understand the purpose of our existence, because that is very much created by these kind of sacred geometries. You know, just imagine.
Great.
Just imagine that the house you're sitting in had no straight lines. Well, you could still have a house, and there are still cultures that do not have straight lines very much in their house, but I'm just saying it would be very, very different.
Yes, it would be. I like what you're saying about contacting the divine through, you know, the sacred geometry and through the resonance with it. I think that's really perfect. You know, you are considered an expert on the Mayan calendar. And there was a great deal of hype in the media and about the predicted date of December 21st, 2012 as the end of the Mayan calendar. And of course, we know that wasn't the end of it. But can you give us a little clarity on that whole subject and tell us what makes the Mayan calendar unique and different from all other calendars?
Yeah. I'd be happy to. I think, first of all, the it was a lot of hype around a particular date. And there are many things that are sort of wrong with that. First of all, it was very much linked to the idea of the end of the world. And Hollywood made this movie 2012, which was sort of an end of the world movie. And in many places, that's what people were talking about. And I think it should be pointed out that there's absolutely nothing in the Mayan sources, either ancient Mayan sources or the contemporary Mayan day keepers, that would speak to a end of the world. So that's something that was completely made up by people. And the second thing is that the Mayan calendar works through different waves, and that's, of course, what my most recent book is about, The Nine Ways of Creation. But these waves are often long. I mean, they can go up to billions of years, and also hundreds of years, and they're very precise in how they can be used for us to understand history and so forth. But the whole idea that everything would happen on a particular date was very misleading. And in fact, the waves, they are now continuing uninterrupted, essentially. You know, this is not to say that there was not a big shift in 2011 and 2012. And all the kind of unusual things that are happening in the world today comes out of the fact that that shift brought into the world completely new energies with these particular waves, the nine waves of creation. But we now, 6 years essentially, since the shift occurred, and we can feel that there is a direction to what is happening. The world is being chaotic, of course, more so than in a very long time. But I just want to point out, it's not something that happens on one particular date. These are processes that are related to a variety of different waves with different periods, and there's nothing, no reality to the idea that the Maya would speak about the end of the world. That is a modern construct.
A modern construct. Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
I think what I would really like is if you could further that clarity by telling our audience something about what you mentioned at the top of this answer to my question, that you're talking about them, the difference in the length or shortness of these waves, and how are these waves calculated, and or are they a result of experiential awareness? How do they come to be, either short or long?
Yeah, that's a good question. To begin with, I think it's a good metaphor always to have in mind when you're looking at the Mayan calendar, is the kind of pyramids that they would build. They would build terrace-formed pyramids that were nine levels, at least in the central locations of their most famous cities, like Chichen Itza, Palenque, and Tikal. And these nine levels of the pyramids, they are actually a metaphor of how the universe evolves. You might say they are nine levels of evolution, and where each level starts on a lower one, so to speak. It begins on a lower one. And they also have different frequencies. So when you start with the lowest frequency, a wave period in that is about 2.5 billion years. And in the next level, the wave period is 20 times shorter, which would put it at about 120 million years. And so forth. And then with every step, there is a 20-fold increase in the frequency of the particular wave until you come to the highest, ninth wave, that was activated only in 2011. That one has a frequency, a wave period is only 36 common days on that particular level. So when the universe has evolved, its new levels, new waves have been activated with higher frequencies, and this is the result that, or one of the results of this is that in recent times, when the highest wave have been activated, there's been much talk about the speed up of time. People experience that things are changing more rapidly before. And that's just because we're all in resonance with, or at least potentially in resonance with, all of these waves. And as the frequency of these waves increase, so will the speed of life, you might say. And but the second question then is, where does it come from? And it's really something that it's from the ancient traditions of the Maya and their calendar system, and which ultimately, I think, was experiential to us. I'm convinced that also now, in our own time, we are also able to sort of recreate this experience. And it's possible, especially to follow the ninth wave and experience how that goes into shifting phases of peaks and valleys as in any kind of a sine wave. But we don't really know. Ultimately, there's no hard answer to the question, where do the waves come from or how were they discovered? We can just assume that in the particular location and in the particular time that the ancient Maya were living, they were more sensitive to these particular waves. And so they started to develop calendars on this basis. And then all we can do really is to take these calendars and see how they fit with the what we know about history and the evolution of the universe in the big picture. And since it seems to be matching up very, very well and very, very elegantly, I think we have to take it seriously. If we want to know, you know, where the universe is going and where it's coming from, because these waves are fundamental to that. I think there was a third question you had on top of it that I lost there.
Well, I think you identified the fact that when you first started talking about the waves, that the nine levels were like an evolutionary process, and that makes a lot of sense because
yeah.
they're kind of defined by what's going on in societies. Thank you for that, and I have to mention that my husband and I were traveling, and we did go to Chichen Itza and experience
yeah.
the beautiful pyramid. Yes.
Yeah.
There was some kind of story they told about a certain day that the light would come from the sun at a certain angle. Are you familiar with that?
I am, and I think I actually had a picture taken that I took from that event in the book. What it is that twice a year on the equinoxes in March and in September, there is like a light show, if you want to call it that, produced mm-hmm. by on this pyramid. And I had a hard time figuring out before I actually saw it. But really what happens is that on this particular date and on no other dates, I know this because I was there once when it was cloudy and didn't get to see it. And then you have no second chance, so to speak.
Oh,
and but anyway, what happens is that in those dates, the shadows that are created by the terraces of the pyramids are projected onto the staircase of the pyramid. And this staircase actually then has, at its end, it has a serpent head. So what is being projected then are seven triangles of light, like scales of the back of the serpent going into the earth. It's absolutely amazing when you actually see this. It's not too. I was there, and it's a big celebration. Probably 100,000 mm-hmm. people are usually there. It's a spring
yeah.
Ceremony in March, and so it's all kinds of native dances and stuff like that going on. And then it's about 20 minutes or something like that in the late afternoon when this projection is. But it goes into your marrow. It really touches you very deeply because it's almost inconceivable when you start thinking about it. How could they build the pyramid in this particular way? I mean, again, building a pyramid is not something where you have a second chance. You know, if it's a little bit off, you can't move it. It's there. But somehow they knew from the very, very beginning that, okay, this is exactly how we're going to build it to produce this kind of shadow effect exactly on the spring and autumn equinoxes. And it's something that short circuits your mind, and you get the connection to ancient times in a remarkable way.
Yes, it's quite extraordinary. We missed the date too, but we were talked to about it, and so I'm glad you explained it, because it sounds, like I said, quite extraordinary. So yeah. I guess I have just one other question for you regarding the Mayan calendar, and that's the relationship between it and the paradigm shift. Is there like a profound change in the perception of events with the paradigm shifts, or how would you explain that?
Well, you know, what the Mayan calendar is essentially it's a complex system of mm-hmm. Calendars. And now I remember the question that I didn't ask previously. What's the difference between the Mayan calendar and other calendars? And I would say that the Mayan calendar is really the only one that is not based on astronomy. And that may sound strange at first thought, because people know that they were very interested in astronomy. But it's a different way, different interest, because the Maya had the calendar first, and then they were interested in how the astronomy fitted with their calendar. So it's sort of the other way around. And so their calendar is more like built on these spiritual waves and spiritual frequencies rather than the material phenomena that is cycling in like around our Earth, the Moon, or these kind of things. So it's a calendar that is based on the spiritual reality much more than on the material reality.
Yeah,
it is, and it's very fascinating, because there is one aspect of this calendar system that is called the sacred calendar, which is a 260-day cycle of energies, combinations of glyphs and numbers, and it's very well known. There's no astronomical cycle that is 260 days, and yet this is the sacred calendar, as they call it. And these energies, when you start to follow them, you can start to experience that they are actually real. But of course, you have to know. You have to have some kind of a background, somebody telling you on what particular day you are, in order to begin to learn to experience the shifting energies of this particular days. Going back to the question of paradigm shifts, when you have these long paradigm long cycles, there is one that's called the long count, and it's the sixth wave in the system of the nine. That's a wave that started 5,000 years ago, and a peak in this wave is 394 years. And whenever there are shifts in these waves, then the human beings who are in resonance with these waves will also produce paradigm shifts in their thinking. So, for instance, if you go back to the beginning of the last peak, which was 1617 in our chronology, then you really have the scientific revolution that took place in Europe at that time, with Galileo and Kepler and so forth, the scientific revolution leading up to Newton and many others, a completely new way of thinking that where sort of rationality and mathematics and all these kind of things would start mm-hmm. to determine how people approached understanding nature. And, whatever you think about these things, whether you think they're good or bad, it's just a fact that these shifts in the wave will always produce these kind of paradigm shifts. And at this time, when all the nine waves are activated for the first time in the history of the universe, actually, we are in a paradigm shift. It's not something that happens on a particular day or something like that, but we're at the beginning of something profound, much more widely. I think what is happening at this time is that the ninth wave make people see that everything is connected to everything else. And as that insight continues, there will be all kinds of paradigm shifts resulting from that shift in our own mind, and we will see the world more and more differently. Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. So that ninth wave is bringing about this unity and connectedness, and that's what will make them shift their perception. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think those of us within that tribe of folks sharing expanded consciousness with people find that that news of and the information about that very something we can appreciate, because it gives more credibility to what we're actually experiencing. You know, it puts some science behind our experience. And so that's really fun. I want to remind anybody who may be just joining us that we are talking to scientist, philosopher, Mayan calendar expert, Carl Johan Kalman, PhD. We're discussing his book, The Nine Waves of Creation, Quantum Physics, Holographic Evolution, and the Destiny of Humanity. I'm going to ask a question that Beth and I found so fascinating when we were reading your book, and that's your reference about the left and right sides of the brain in relation to the left and right hemispheres of the Earth. And can you expound on that relationship a little bit as you have it defined in your graphics within the book, and fold into that, if you could, the explanation about the inclusion of the polarity between light and darkness in that regard. I hope that question made sense.
It does, but there are many hidden questions in that.
Hidden questions, which is why I'm asking it, I guess.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what happened when, as we have come to this insight that everything is connected with everything else. So it means that the questions become very multifaceted, mm-hmm. Actually, that whole question of the relationship between the Earth and the brain is something I discussed more in my previous book, The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization, and I'm only touching upon it, I think. But basically, what it seems to be like is that on many different levels of the universe, there are separations between hemispheres. The whole universe seems to be divided into hemispheres, as I mentioned earlier, that this is new results that are coming out of recent studies of the birth of the universe. But it's also on the level of our planet that we are quite aware that there is a difference between the eastern and the western hemisphere. I mean, civilizations have been distinguished on this basis for a long time, and yeah. We would you know, traditionally at least, we have thought of the Western Hemisphere as being more individualistic and the Eastern Hemisphere as being more collectivistic. And these are things that you can, you know, you can see, for instance, that the Islam is a religion that is much more collectivistic. People do collective pilgrimages to Mecca, and people turn to Mecca five times a day en masse, or like a billion people or something like that. It, you know, it's really a collective working. Whereas in the West, where Christianity has dominated, you have, it's much more of developing an individual relationship, traditionally speaking anyway, to Jesus and so forth. And traditionally, I mean, now the world is changing so much, these traditional thing doesn't really quite apply, but traditionally there's been you know, much more emphasis on individual rights and so forth in the Western Hemisphere, and politically speaking there's been sort of dominated by empires and so forth on the Eastern Hemisphere. I think that was very, you might say that this distinction between individualism and collectivism was very much evident during the Cold War, when the quite different political systems were in the East and the West. And what's interesting about that is that sort of is reflected also in the brains of a human being, because the left brain half, which then corresponds to the Western Hemisphere, is the analytical brain half. It's the one that picks things apart. So you have the part is the individual, if you like, and the right brain half is the one that puts things together, that synthesizes rather than analyzes. And this putting things together, synthesize, that's much more like the collective mentality of the Eastern Hemisphere. And so there is a clear parallels that I've discussed in earlier books between the brain halves and the two hemispheres on our planet. And ultimately, all of this goes back to the two hemispheres of the whole cosmos that that I discussed earlier. And what this means is that our brains are in resonance with the Earth. And depending on where we live, and this really goes back to the inner core of the Earth, that's really where we get our minds from. But depending on where we live, we will be more or less in resonance with the Eastern and the Western hemispheres, and that's how the world has, this is something that really has shaped our world history. This is where the separation into brain half ultimately comes from. It's because the universe is really separated on many different levels into different kind of hemispheres.
I love that. So then that kind of represents the heliosphere of the what we might see in the DNA strand, or even in the cosmic movement of the universe. That polarity of light and dark. Okay. All right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Awesome. I wanted to let everybody know, because this is kind of fun, and maybe you can talk a little bit more about that on the if everybody want. And this is actually on the website where you're listening to this show right now. You can see on the screen I've got a couple of links on there. For everybody, and one is a link to go pick up a copy of his book, The Ninth Wave, The Nine Waves of Creation, but also and also his website, Kellerman.com, but also a link to his Facebook page, which is called The Ninth Wave. And The Ninth Wave brings you to this fun calculator that will actually let you know where in the ninth wave you are, we are, at any given moment. And I checked that out today, and it looks like we're in day five of the 63rd night Can you explain what that means a little bit for our audience? Who will appreciate going to your website and checking that out.
It's really very important, I think. Overall, you know, the waves have peaks and valleys, these kind of waves. And those two phases of the wave have quite different character. So when you're in a peak of the wave, then things are moving forward to create something step by step, peak by peak in the wave. On the other hand, when you're in the valley or the night, as I would also call it, then it's not the forward movement. It's usually like a dark age or a period of reaction, or but also integration rather than forward movement. So with each wave, what its purpose is to develop, that happens in those time periods that are peaks of the wave. And there's been nine waves, they all have different functions and play different roles in the creation of the universe. The lower waves essentially create biological species, and the higher waves, they essentially create the mental evolution of the particular human species that is central to creation on our particular planet. And the new thing that happened in 2011 is really the most important aspect of the shift in that time, is that the ninth wave was activated. It's never been activated before. And you might say that the purpose of this ninth wave is to bring humanity back to unity consciousness. And what that means in turn is to give people a perception of reality, that they are seeing the world through unity mind. And what happens with human beings when they start to download a wave like this is that they start to recreate the world outside of them consistently, so that, you know, if you see the world through a filter, without any filters, then you will only see unity, and you start to recreate unity also in the external world. So that's and that's the last of the waves, the highest of the waves, the highest frequency of the waves, and to the gradually people will resonate with this wave, and as that happens, a world of peace will come about. And this is not something that might happen tomorrow or on a particular date in the near future. It's something that will happen over time to the extent that people develop a resonance with this particular wave, because that allows people to elevate themselves over the duality that still exists very, very, very much in the world. But the dualities that were created by lower waves. And so the ninth wave then has this particular wave period of 36 days. And you said we're now in the beginning of the nights or the valleys of this particular thing. And we are some people now that are working to make people aware of this. Like, it's almost like, you know, people have not been told that there is a new radio station that they can tune into, because that's really what it is, and so there will be events going on May 24th, June 29th, August 4th, and so forth, when new peaks are beginning, because it's in those peaks that people get the primary guidance, spiritually speaking, to go in the direction of the unity consciousness. And of course, that you know, we all have our individual lives, and that look very differently, and we have our own individual purposes and so forth. But regardless of our individual differences in this regard, we all share that. How do we transfer the question? How do we transfer our individual lives in such a way that it will serve this destiny of humanity of going towards unity consciousness? And for that, it is like people need to know how to listen to this wave, how to listen to this frequency and tune into it. And this, you know, you will find, especially on my Facebook page, the Nine Waves of Creation Mayan Calendar, it's called, or you can find it through my name, Kalamon. There are many other places there too, but there, you know, like May 24th is the beginning of a new such wave, and what will people are gathering in many parts of the world to just mark this particular thing. And one of the most interesting aspects of that particular celebration, you might say, the beginning of a new wave, is that a group of Bushmen will be dancing in Kalahari to mark this particular beginning of a new wave in the ninth wave period in the ninth wave, and a group of Mayan elders will also be performing ceremonies to mark this in Mexico, and it's really an event on May 24th, and you can read about it if you look for it on Facebook, especially. It's to let people know there is a new radio station there broadcasting waves, new. I mean, it's 6 years old at this particular time, but it's for most people it's still news, and it's something that I recommend very much, because especially if we're heading to fairly difficult times where many political systems seems to be even collapsing in the world, that people will need to have some kind of a radio station to tune into. And of course, this is not a radio station where somebody else tells you what to do. It's a divine wave that is being transmitted from the center of the universe, and the individual himself or herself will have to interpret the meaning of this particular guidance that comes with the ninth wave. But people need to know that it's there. It's a really fundamental change that happened in the world in 2011. And the change means that now all nine waves are for the first time ever running in parallel. And the one that defines the destiny of humanity is the highest frequency wave, and the ninth wave. And of course, you know, anyone can go into and see that, as you mentioned. I was happy you mentioned that, the particular wave function. And to see any time you want to see where are we in the wave and so forth.
Well, Dr. Kalamon, this has been such an amazing hour. It's almost up here now, and we thank you so much for being here. Yes, and for all of our listeners, be sure to go over to Dr. Kalamon's Facebook page to experience the Peace and Unity Ninth Wave. And he gave us some dates: May 24th, June 29th, August 4th. Special things are happening on those days, and like he mentioned earlier, this is a place where you can go to find out more about the ninth wave and which will affect humanity. So, I'd like to say goodbye to everybody, and thank you again to Dr. Kalamon, and I'll hand it back to Dogny.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dr. Kalamon. We have really enjoyed this time with you. This has just been so fascinating. We hope you'll come speak with us again sometime.
Yes, I'd love to.
Yeah,
great.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. This has really been a fun experience for us, and I know our listeners have just been fascinated by this as well. And to them, we want to, of course, share our ongoing appreciation for your listening into Echoes of the Soul Radio, brought to you by Matrix Productions. And so until next time, peace.
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 Thank you for tuning in to Echoes of the Universe. Join us again for conversations that inspire you to realize your endless possibilities. Same time, same station, same universe.